The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. And I do mean proudly, by the way. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from the South Point. Still to come, Danielle Alvari on the WNBA. Eric Eager going to join us, talk NFL schedule, his thoughts on it. Other people have thoughts besides me, Kelly. We should know that.
No.
So Eric Eager's going to have some as well. And then Josh Towers. He's in studio, isn't he? He's just going to roll on in?
Allegedly.
We don't know. Maybe there's another reason he wants to hang out here. I just won't say it out loud. In the meantime, it's our senior NBA analyst, JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, to talk NBA playoffs with us. Always a pleasure. How you doing, John?
I'm good. Other people, everybody on the planet has thoughts. The question is, do those thoughts matter?
That's right? Correct.
I think that's the real question.
That is correct. That is how I didn't say it quite that way the first hour, but you have.
That's how you should have put it.
You have voiced it for me. That's exactly right. Let's talk about the Celtics and Sixers first before we get to tonight's game. So Joe Mazzulla is coaxed by all reports. Brian Windhorst talked about this, into starting Robert Williams and Al Horford, which apparently his players wanted him to do. He does it. The Sixers start out from the field 1 of 11 to start things off. They do catch up, and this game ends up being nip and tuck. I mean, Celtics go out to a big lead, 16 points a couple times, nip and tuck in the fourth, until Jason Tatum goes from nothing to everything. He erupts, and the Celtics get it done and force a game 7. Celtics favored by 7.5 on Sunday. Your thoughts on last night, your thoughts on that game.
So I get it. And here's the thing, right? This is Kelly and I actually talked about this a couple of times on the podcast, Gil. And, you know, we kept comparing Boston, rightfully so, because they're the defending Eastern Conference champs, lost in the NBA Finals to the team from last year. But there was one key difference. It was Robert Williams, right? Robert Williams was part of that starting lineup. Robert Williams was and should have been Defensive Player of the Year last year because of what they did, right? They put Al Horford on there primarily as the defender against opposing centers. They put Robert Williams off ball, and their strategy was, Rob, all you got to do is come in and crash. Anytime somebody goes to the rim, you're going to help. You're going to be our best help defender. Changed everything for them defensively. And so finally, you go back to what you had cooking last year, and what happens? Your defense all of a sudden looks pretty close to the defense that was last year, right? And it's a little bit more consistent. So if they're going to continue to kind of roll out with this formula, I think you can kind of bank on Boston, at the very least defensively, finding some more consistency, right? That has been the problem for Boston throughout this postseason. I've said this stat a million times, Gil. Game 3 in Atlanta series up until last night, a defensive rating and non-garbage time of 119.9 for Boston. That's not who they should be. And so now, if you're going to go back to the lineup that made you what you were a season ago, I think you can kind of bank on some consistency from them. We saw yesterday, even though you had an offensive rating of what, like 89 or 99, you still shot 45.5% on three-point attempts in that game. So your three-point shooting is still going to be there. I think that this is going to unlock some stuff now for Boston to find some consistency and now be the team that the market has rated them this entire time. So as we kind of look forward, and you're talking about taking on Joel Embiid and the 76ers in game 7, I mean, I think now the rating for Boston is accurate. I would feel comfortable going in and potentially laying 7.5 with the Boston Celtics in game 7, because they have the defensive ability to shut down Philly. I still think Philly has some questions along the perimeter defensively. We've seen their three-point shooting be a consistent barometer here throughout this series. And if you're going to get the form of Boston that was last year defensively, this team is going to be, I think, starting to take shape of the team we thought they were all along.
Yeah, and you may be very right, and the Celtics might roll them. But, you know, like, I go on and on about how, the Stanley Cup playoffs, I mean, how could you predict these from one game to another? This series, I mean, let's at least concede, I think you would, nothing has gone according to form, right? Like, the Sixers win that first game without Embiid. Yep. Then, like, game 5, it's on the Celtics racket. The Sixers come in and beat them. Last night, the Sixers can close it out. They don't get it done. So, I mean, you would agree that any outcome here, like, there's a wide range of outcomes that you wouldn't be surprised by.
Yeah, well, I think 100%. I just feel like I would feel more confident in the angle that I'm taking, because at least there's been a tangible change, right?
I agree.
You're not going into this game with, hey, let's just roll them back out there and see what's going to happen, because they played well defensively today. They're going to be better in game 7. Like, at least they're making a change, with which we have a sizable sample size of data from last season that tells us this crew, this starting 5, is elite, especially on the defensive end of the floor.
Before we get to tonight's games, I think you're absolutely right about that. That's the key difference. Before we get to tonight's, anything to say? Let me ask you about the Nuggets. I asked this of Kelly earlier. Should they have been the short shot to win it all from the beginning of the playoffs? And if not, should they be now?
I think yes and yes. You know, we've talked about this a lot, and Kelly and I have spoken on it, and I think we brought it up with you before too. You know, the market's love for Phoenix was really odd, right? Because they shipped off everything to get Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant's very good, but that's a very thin team. And then the market's infatuation, Gil, was once we get into the postseason of, hey, they beat 8 non-playoff teams by a lot. Look, like, they're going to be really good. And it's like, well, no, you got to take this with some nuance. There's a team that has an inherent home court advantage, right? When we talk about playing at altitude, especially against thin teams like Phoenix, who has been consistent all year long with a 2-time MVP and a team that's relatively deep, this team maybe should be like at the top of the board in terms of winning this thing. And especially now, as we're looking at it, Jokic is playing otherworldly basketball.
Yeah,
like,
man,
this guy has been absolutely fantastic. He is going to be the best player on the court in any given series. You look at their next few opponents, he's awesome. And this team is a lot deeper. So I would say yes to both of those.
Kelly, could you check if KD has asked for a trade this morning and to which team he's asked for a trade? Could you check into that for us?
Yeah, the Photoshopped images of KD in a Denver Nuggets uniform are already on Twitter, yes.
That's so funny. By the way, the podcast that JVT keeps referring to that he does with Kelly is called Hardwood Handicappers. You can find it wherever podcasts are distributed. VSiN.com/podcast might be the easiest spot to get that. What about tonight? By the way, of course, the Nuggets waiting for the Lakers-Warriors winner, which we'll save for second here because the first game is the Heat. And the Knicks game 6 is in Miami, and the Heat are looking to close this out. The Heat now up to 6-point favorites. This was 4.5 yesterday. It was 5.5 when we started the show. Now we're showing a consensus 6 on the Heat. Look, it was Brunson who went the full 48. It was Grimes who went the full 48, and the Knicks just barely got there in game 5 after leading by 19. Heat close them out, don't they? But do they cover?
Yeah. I think so. And that's the question, right? Because I've been talking about this a lot throughout this entire postseason. Anybody would listen. And I think it's such an interesting conversation of, like, how much are you as a bettor willing to pay in terms of a tax on a line, given the situation, right? Like, the Miami Heat are coming back home. They're taking on a Knicks team that you said had to throw everything at the wall to eke out a win back at home. Like, it makes sense that you would want to come in on Miami here. But just because they're in a closeout game at home doesn't mean that they have to cover. And the market just pushing this number up and up and up just kind of gives you a little pause, right, with how inflated this is. So I do think that Miami comes in and they can win this game. I think they will close New York out. I think they are a team that is a little bit deeper in terms of what they have, especially with Emmanuel Quickley still considered doubtful for this game with that ankle sprain. And they are just a little bit more well-coached. And you saw it. I mean, look at what Miami did, as you mentioned, clawing their way back, using Duncan Robinson to get back into that game, Hakeem Mitchell Robinson. They're a very well-coached team. They're using any strategy to get these things done. But if I'm betting this, Gil, especially when you're talking about a total of where are we at right now, 208.5.
So
I'm
going to
208.
Right? Oh, yeah, 207.5 for popping up too. Yeah, right. So, like, if you have such a low total, I'm willing to bet that you're going to get a better in-game number here on Miami at some point in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So I would sit back and wait for an in-game opportunity to lay something cheap with Miami. But I do think that the Heat close this thing.
I like that strategy. Heat first half, no? You don't want to do that?
I think it makes some sense. I'm one that I like a larger sample size to have my bet play out, right? So, like, you know, over two quarters, any sort of variance can come out where the Knicks hit a bunch of three-point shots because they're all jazzed up. And then, of course, we know what happens to the rest of the game if the Miami Heat come back, close that thing out, you know?
If I give Eric Spoelstra truth serum and they win this game tonight, who would the Heat rather play in the Eastern Conference Finals?
I think it's Philly, right? I think that's probably that. Because the thing is with Boston, Miami, they're different from last year. I know a lot of people want to refer to them as the one seed from a season ago, but now in the starting lineup, remember, it's Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, and Kevin Love. There are a lot of guys for the Boston Celtics to pick on defensively, right? If they're going to actually go out there in a matchup and meet up with them one-on-one. So I think you'd rather face Philadelphia, who's a little bit easier for you to guard in terms of your personnel.
Okay. The nightcap, which, I mean, does it get any better than this? I suppose if it were the NBA Finals, it would be better than this, but it can't be. They're in the same conference. But this is Game 6 in L.A., and as many have said, boy, the Lakers don't want this going back to San Francisco. Wiggins, questionable. I think he goes, but who knows? I mean, and to what degree is he hampered? He's obviously huge as a defender, just as much as he is on the offensive side of the court. Lakers are favored by 3. The total's 221. What happens here, JVT, is at the end of the dynasty?
You know, it pains me to say, LA 2.5 with LA. I was kind of surprised that the number was where it was at the open at 2 and then 2.5. And now we're eventually getting up to 3 here. Because I think when you're looking at this, you know, the injury question marks, why was the market hedging its bets on Anthony Davis not playing, where he's right. listed as probable, he's not in concussion protocol, and the other key piece, as you mentioned, is Andrew Wiggins, who's questionable with the cartilage fracture. That's really important. And here's the thing, Gil, even if he plays, you mentioned, I think he's probably going to, if I'm LeBron and AD, guess what? We're posting you up on every single possession, and we're banging every time to see if you're feeling that rib or not. So I think, like, all of these things put together, especially if Wiggins is off, for a team that is so reliant on their three-point shooting, that could be missing their 3-and-D specialist that is guarding arguably the best player on the other side and is a three-point shooter, for a team that has struggled to shoot, by the way, throughout this entire series, I think it's a really big deal that the market kind of undervalued its factor in as you're looking at this. Maybe we're paying the Corgi tax, right? Because the Corgi knows all, and they know that the Corgi has predicted that the Lakers are going to lose this game, so the market's a little shy on the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, maybe that's
But I think, you're right. But I think, in all seriousness, everything put together, I was surprised that the Lakers opened up 2, and it took so long to get to 3. So I laid 2.5 with the Lakers, as much as it pains to say me.
Okay, so before you go, same question here. If I gave Michael Malone, head coach of the Nuggets, truth serum, I want you to pause a beat before you answer this. Who would you rather play in the Western Conference Finals?
I mean, I want to say the Lakers, but I don't think it's an easy choice.
Not an easy choice.
Right. They could both run on you. They can both test that bad transition defense. I want to say the Lakers, but I don't think it's like a just jump at the Lakers because they're the easy mark.
Yeah. I don't know who you pick there. That's difficult. They're just happy to be there for now. That's for sure. JVT, enjoy the games tonight, man. Should be awesome.
Good to talk to you guys. Thank you.
Jonathan Von Tobel, everybody. Hardwood Handicappers is the name of the podcast. @MeJVT, our senior NBA analyst. We'll come back. Eric Eager from Sumer Sports, his thought on the NFL schedule release. What notes should we make additionally? It's next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Kelly, I refuse to watch this White Man Can't Jump remake with that little pisher Jack Harlow.
Yeah, I think I'm with you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are we on air? Oh, my fault. Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data.
Swimmers.
Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, yet another way that VSiN is here to make you smarter, better year-round. Check them out, all of today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Our pro tip, which we mentioned earlier, we don't want to telegraph the past with pro tips, but if you were listening earlier, I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than this. With the NFL schedule release, you don't need to be making any NFL bets right now. You can if you want. If you think the market's going to move on any particular game, sure, I'm not going to tell you not to. But even if you don't, it's a great time to analyze each team's schedule and circle spots for you to jump in with totals bets, division bets, etc., other kinds of futures bets. Know where the tough swings are, know where the easy spells are, and bet accordingly if teams get through or don't get through those schedules. It might create a sag in betting numbers or a spike that you can exploit to the over, to the under, or to the positive, or to the negative. So I gave all my thoughts on many of the teams. One note here from Cleve TA before we get to Eric Eager from Sumer Sports to get his thoughts on the NFL schedule. Cleve TA, we're not really a trends show here on a numbers game, but if Cleve TA likes something, we'll point it out. He points out that the Browns are 2.5 dogs, 2.5 point dogs week one, are one of 4 home dogs in division games week number one. Who they got? Cincinnati week one, is it, Kelly?
Yep.
Since 2010, home dogs in divisional games, week one, are 21-5 against the spread at an 81% clip and won 62% of the games outright. He goes on to say the 62% outright is incredible considering those teams had only a 36% win probability going into those games. So the team that it applies to in week one this year are the Browns, 2.5-point home dogs against their division rival Cincinnati Bengals. And speaking of Cincinnati, we go to the Cincinnati area of the country for Eric Eager, Sumer Sports, our buddy, for his thoughts on the schedule. How you doing, Eric?
Doing great. They really turned yesterday into a fun day, and obviously for all of us that have backed the Detroit Lions for the restoration of the roar, it was sort of the culmination of the roar with them getting the opening night nod against Kansas City, so that was fun.
the culmination of the roar. I would say a Super Bowl title is the culmination, but we can start with the opening game. That's true.
Oh, no, we got to. This is about gambling. This is about setting realistic expectations.
That's right. Well, just like culmination sounded very, very dramatic. All right. So as you look at the schedule, and one of the things that I, you know, I'm not as concerned with, like, oh, this team has six primetime games, that kind of thing. I want to know those stretches where we're like, okay, we need to be aware of that because this, at least on paper, right? None of us knows anything for sure. Our assumptions about teams will inevitably be torpedoed in many cases. But what were your reactions? What were some of your first reactions to this?
Yeah, for sure. I think like the really interesting one was a couple teams that I'm close to. Kansas City, I think, has a much easier slate on paper than they did last year. Last year, they, I believe, their first 9 or 10 opponents had winning records the previous year. And this year, it eases up significantly for them. With teams like even the teams that have winning records early on in their slate are, you know, the Lions, Jaguars, those are 9 and 8 teams. Minnesota is a team that's not necessarily thought of, to be that strong. And they go the road there. They also have a bye in week 10, which, you know, if you look at past Super Bowl winners, there's only been, I think, 1 or 2 Super Bowl winners in the last like 10 years that have had byes prior to week 10. So that's an interesting thing to look at. And then they do close with some tough ones in the Bengals and the Chargers, but still like a pretty solid schedule. The other one is the aforementioned Lions. When you look at the NFC North, I think that, you know, there's going to be a culling of the NFC North early in the season by other divisions, and whether or not the NFC North stands the test of time is really going to, you know, benefit or detract from the teams at the very end. Cause you look at where Detroit is to finish their season. You're looking at, you know, Minnesota, you know, home and home. You're looking at the Bears as well. Like they get a lot of their divisional opponents, the Packers, you know, on that Thursday, Thanksgiving, like they really get, you know, their division later on in the season. And I think by then we're going to know whether or not Jordan Love is any good. We're going to know whether or not the Vikings were a mirage last year. And so the Lions don't have to be that team that sort of, reveals that. They get to be the team that capitalizes on it later in the season.
Just two follow-ups on those two teams, the Chiefs and the Lions. The Chiefs, you're so right. Like this time last year, I know I raised my hand. I was like, so about this. I was like, oh my God, look at the Chiefs' first 7 games. It's a complete gauntlet. And they just rolled through it, right? 5-2. So sometimes gauntlets aren't gauntlets if you're good enough. And the Lions thing, the one thing I was pointing out earlier, did you notice they play the Vikings twice in a 3-week span, weeks 16 and 18. So like that division, that could go down to that right there.
Or if you're the Lions and the Vikings are not what anybody thought they were, mm-hmm. like that game might look a lot more difficult. Like, you know, it's not right, and you know this as much as or better than anybody, it's not right to look at previous year's win-loss record right. when judging a schedule. But, like, Minnesota's 13-4 last year. Like, they're not – whatever they're going to be, like, they're not it right now. In my opinion, I think they're probably going to go down, of course. So if you're Detroit, you get those teams sort of at the end. Same with Dallas. You think about Dallas – you know, they've won 12 games the last 2 years, which is awesome. They're the one team that everybody's like, well, they're either going to win 12 games or lose 12 games. Like if Detroit catches them on that latter version of that, like that 3-week stretch at the end of the year could be 3 cupcakes, right? And, you know, much the same way that the Broncos game, on New Year's Day for the Chiefs was easier than everybody thought it was. And so on. Like the Chiefs schedule, when you look back on how it actually went, because teams like Denver failed, because teams, later on in the season weren't as good. Like their schedule actually was far easier. The Raiders, for example, going from 10-7 to a losing record. Like, you know, it's interesting how these things end up unfolding. But I think if you look at the back half of some of these schedules, you're like, wow, those are teams that had definitive outcomes in 2022, but have wide variances. I think that plays, of course, to the benefit of teams that have it that way because, usually good teams decline. You know, there's just a regression to the mm-hmm. mean, of course.
Would you agree with this? Because I'll tell you, I'm eyeballing, and then unbeknownst to me, right, I didn't look at Warren Sharp's because Warren Sharp was doing, you know, top and bottom, most difficult, easiest schedules, top and bottom based on season win totals, aggregate season win totals, which is how we do it, and as you do it. And I was eyeballing the Niners schedule. So after the draft and the Eagles just kind of recreating the Georgia defense, you're like, oh, wow, maybe the Eagles have now separated themselves in some degree from the Niners. Niners still have Brock Purdy. You just don't know if that small sample size is going to manifest longer term. But then I looked at the schedule, man, and I'm like, oh, maybe this came right back because the Niners schedule, Warren had them 10th easiest. By my eyeballing it, I was like, oh, my God, it's easy. And then the Eagles have this brutal stretch in the middle. So I felt like it kind of, you know, the schedule is the schedule. It doesn't really move needles tremendously. But I thought, if anything, there was some incremental comeback on that.
Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, the teams are known in January. So you can go out and figure that out. But the ordering matters quite a bit. Like, when you get these teams to the point that I said, like, if you get what we think are easier teams early in the year, I like that more than what we think are easy. Like, if you had Seattle on your schedule late in the 2022 season, we were talking about this last year.
Oh, yeah.
That might have been a much better – that was a much better come-up than it actually was, right? Because it ended up being Seattle was a fairly decent team that was hard to beat. So, yeah, I think there is some separation when you look at when you get, you know, who you're playing. And also weather effects. Like the Vikings, for example, I bagged on the Vikings a little bit. They don't get any cold weather games, and they're a dome team, right? So, you know, when you get teams is not super important. I mean, you're talking about, you know, fractions of a win, fractions of wins. But, it, there are correlated effects there. And, like, whether or not you get three road games in a row or whether or not, of course, you get a late bye and those kind of things.
For sure. We have a minute left. Anything else jump out to you that you wanted to mention, Eric?
I think it's, you know, the Giants, of course, have a really tough slate. The whole NFC East played a really easy slate a season ago, and that manifests itself in everybody having a better than 500 record or 500 record or better, including your Commies. It's not going to be as easy this year for them. So when I think about the Giants, the Washington, Philly, and Dallas, like, I think about those teams are teams that probably want to fade a little bit, down the stretch here, just because. For example, you know, New York, they get Eagles, Rams, Eagles. Like, we like the Rams there, but the Eagles, you know, are they a team that you think is going to be good all year? Because that one could be really tough down the stretch for them.
Yeah, it's interesting to me, getting back to the Niners point, that of all the win totals that have moved, the Niners actually went down a game. Like, I totally don't get that move based on the schedule release. Eric, this is going to be so much fun, man. There's football and there's everything else, for sure. Nice shot on the Commies there, by the way, also. Just to get Daniel Snyder out of the building. Thank you, Eric. Great to see you, man.
Hey, Gil. Thanks for having me on, man.
My man, Eric Eager, Sumer Sports, Sumer Sports, at Eric Eager _ on Twitter. The Doctor. We'll come back. Daniel Alvari on the WNBA season kicking off, or tipping off, I should say, next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event, date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $9.99. That's $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. This is from, let's see here, Scott. This is a different Scott at Mad Marine 77. Gil, what we really want to know is who we're taking week one in Survivor. All right, we're not there yet. Just want to react to schedules first. Maybe I'll give thoughts on that on Monday. Week one Survivor plays. All right, Monday. We'll do that.
You get a lot of demand for it. Yeah.
Monday, week one Survivor. You got it, Scott. I'll do it. T for three, Tom F. With all this Embiid hate, where do I return my 15, 12, and 10-1 MVP tickets? Good for you, T for three. Good for you, man. Chance Copperpot apologizing for his earlier confusing tweet. Nah, man, Chance, I love it. Every effort is appreciated. Oh, LFC wants to know, shout out to your guest earlier this week who gave out Kennen as a long shot. It was either the guy under the cloud or Drew Tinsick. Okay, the guy under the cloud is, first of all, it's under smoke. Let's get that clear. Under a cloud of smoke. Jason Weingart. No, it was Drew Dinsick. Drew Dinsick said that Kennen would be a good pick to win the quarter at the Italian Open, and she did upset Sabalenka. But I do think he's right that she's a great play to win that quarter now. So Drew Dinsick gets the credit for that. Trip Tepper. Oh, University of North Carolina has potentially the first Israeli-born FBS player, quarterback, I believe it's Michael Merdinger. Thank you for pointing that out, Trip Tapper. We appreciate that. Always on this show. And then this is from P. Willie. Love today's NFL schedule breakdowns. Who could potentially be this year's Brock Purdy? I mean, I don't know. Like a late round draft pick that was a quarterback?
I don't think there's a lot of options.
Yeah, I don't think there's a
Does
lot.
Does Hendon Hooker count?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Oh, he ain't going to play.
And then Jamie Leva says, the remake to White Men Can't Jump is a Travis Shan mockery. So glad you brought it up. I found myself getting angry every time the ad popped up. I might be getting old.
I can't do it. Like some of the remake movies, I can't.
Have we run out of ideas in Hollywood? Like we just don't have any more ideas?
Okay. Danielle is so patiently waiting for us. I'm sorry, Danielle. Yeah. But what drives me nuts even more is network television these days because nobody watches it, right?
Right.
And it's like, hey, a new season of The Eraser. And you're like, wait, was that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie from like the mid 90s? Like, oh, we're just making TV shows out of movies.
Like they do a Magnum PI now, too, right?
Can
I give something that I really recommend that has nothing to do with sports? You want a documentary? It's not really a documentary. It's a dramatic, I don't know how to describe
retelling?
It. I don't know how to describe it. I'll bring Danielle in for this. But this is
she's laughing so
on the History Channel, but it's also available on Hulu. And it's in its fourth season, The Food That Built America.
Corn.
The Food That Built America. No. It's much better than this. So it's a dramatic reenactment. Listen. We are born in non-wartime. We are born at such a fortunate time in our lives. We never process that because we just take it for granted. But like when we were born, the grocery stores were stocked with cereals and candies and sodas and all this stuff, right? Well, 150 years ago, none of this existed. So this is the story of how all of this happened, and it is wildly fascinating. I recommend it to everybody.
The evolution of bread sounds fantastic.
Dude. Soda Wars, how Domino's and Pizza Hut came to be, the guy who made the ketchup, H.J. Heinz, how important he is in the history of the world based on his innovations.
Did they cover when they started slicing bread?
Okay, you're making a mockery. Danielle,
that sounds interesting.
Danielle Alvari, ladies and gentlemen, here I am pouring my heart out about a docuseries recommendation. Not a docuseries, but a show recommendation. And Kelly just mocking me. How you doing, Danielle?
Gil, some people will do anything to avoid talking about the WNBA. Expected better.
Wow. She's on to me. Come on. It's not true. Not true at all. How you doing, first of all? You good?
I'm good. I'm great. I'm looking forward to your next visit out to Los Angeles.
Yes. We'll hang out again. I just want to ask you this, though. You're involved in something way cooler than anything we do here. Could you talk about that for a second before we talk WNBA?
Oh, there's so many things. I assume you're talking about DraftKings starting five here.
That is correct.
Yes, which is a very cool project that they've been doing this season. We're actually coming up on our last shoot this month, so it's kind of the blending of all things basketball culture. So we talk fashion, we talk music. Most recently, we had on one of DraftKings' promoters, if you will, Kevin Hart, which was very fun. So those episodes and some of those things are up on the Starting Five YouTube as well. So it's been a really cool project to work on where betting is kind of meeting all of these other avenues that draw people into basketball.
Hanging out with Kevin Hart, Jada Kiss, you just got a life. We don't do any of that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the WNBA where the Las Vegas Aces are defending champs and the short shot to do it again, plus 125. What do you think about them?
What'd you think about the new facility out there in Vegas that Mark Davis made for the Aces? How about that?
It's awesome. So no more Mandalay. No more that as their home. Mm-mm. Yeah.
No. And it's really cool to see. I mean, we have Candace Parker saying that she's never had a locker in her entire WNBA career. And now she has a locker because she signed with them in the offseason. So this is an Aces team that won a championship last year and is largely the same team. The only person they really lost was Derek Ahamy to the Sparks, who, of course, there's a little bit of not happiness going on there from her side for sure on that. But other than that, this team stayed together. They have Asian Wilson still, Chelsea Gray, Kelsey Plum, Jackie Young, which I just realized how great these all rhyme together. And then they've added Candace Parker, who we know is another MVP. So this is now a team with two MVPs on it in Asia Wilson and Candace Parker. Chelsea Gray is a finals MVP as well, as we saw last year. And then, of course, on the East, you have the New York Liberty with two MVPs. So we have these two super teams, which is a really cool time, I think, in the WNBA's history.
Yeah, two super teams. The Aces are plus 125 to win at Liberty plus 140. By the way, Kelsey Plum is everywhere.
Oh, yeah. She's on a lot of commercials now.
I'm also
looking at the practice facility pictures. These do look really cool. It is right next to the Raiders facility, which is right next to the most underrated casino in Las Vegas, Casino Hotel.
Oh. Henderson?
Yeah, you know, talk about the M.
Oh, yeah.
We always bring it up. We're like, it's so nice. Nobody's ever here.
Yeah. M's phenomenal. We're not avoiding talking about the WNBA, Danielle. Not at all. Give me a long shot. Like if I said that Aces and Liberty are off the table, but you get one bet on a longer shot, who is that team?
Well, so it's interesting. It depends what you mean by longer, right? Because as soon as you go from the Aces and the Liberty, there's a drop off to 14-1 and you start with the Mystics. I love the Mystics here. Elena Deladon said she's never felt stronger this season. Last year, she had a little bit, it sounds kind of silly because, you know, not as many games as we see in the NBA, but a little bit of load management. It's not silly when you think about the back issues that she was dealing with. She also battles Lyme disease. So she was sort of still coming back last season and have to sit out a couple of games this year. She said missing no games, feeling fully strong. They still have Natasha Cloud. They didn't lose a lot of pieces and they actually added. So I think that the Mystics at 14-1 is great value relative to the Aces and Liberty. It's funny because these teams are actually expected to be so dominant that there are even odds up for the Aces or the Liberty to win the title at -650 or any other team at 4-1.
Wow.
So that's kind of what the expectation is this year. If one of these teams doesn't win a championship, that it will be a failure of a season. Not that Giannis would ever say that, but Mystics at 14-1, I like, and you have Brittany Griner coming back on the Mercury. Now the Mercury don't have the most depth, but they still have Diana Taurasi, who Brittany Griner herself described as a walking fossil, but she's still a walking bucket as well. She's the WNBA career leading scorer. So the Mercury here, anticipated return of Brittany Griner, who we know can be incredibly dominant. 25-1 is not terrible. I don't see them coming back and winning a championship this year. But the Mystics, I like. The Wings are going to be a mess because they have everybody on the court can shoot, but not everybody can shoot the basketball every possession. So I'm not sure what they're going to do there. The Dream, I think, are ranked a little bit too high. I think of all these long shots, I like the Mystics the best, which is really just at 14-1. But if you wanted a longer one, maybe the Connecticut Sun at 45-1. They actually cobbled together a very commendable team, given that their team was kind of gutted after they lost Jonquel Jones to the New York Liberty.
Yeah, how happy is Brittany Griner going to be playing basketball? My goodness, after her ordeal. Who's the rookie that was drafted that you think, just off the top of your head, might have the biggest impact on a team?
Well, Leah Boston, first overall, can't ignore that. Of course, she went to the Fever. She's expected to have big things happen there. It would be fun to see the Fever make the playoffs. I don't know if that's even possible. There's actually odds up for the Fever to make the playoffs. I think it's at 17-1, which I'm like, maybe Leah Boston. I mean, they've had a bunch of first round picks. Maybe they put something together this year and surprise us. But the Fever are still 100-1 to win the championship. So we're not talking that yet, but maybe they make playoffs. And then beyond Aaliyah Boston, Diamond Miller with the Lynx has looked really good in preseason. She's from Maryland. Her shooting gets a little bit streaky. So if she can put that together, then I think she's looking at possible Rookie of the Year campaign right in line with Aaliyah Boston.
Aaliyah Boston -250 to win Rookie of the Year. What do you have Diamond Miller at there, Kelly?
+195.
+195.
Yeah, better.
Better. Okay.
Yeah.
Danielle, I appreciate him. This is awesome. Season starts this weekend, is it?
Well, there's the first ever Canadian game, actually, Gil, this weekend. Mm-hmm. But next Friday, we got games.
Okay. This one count this weekend, the Canadian game? Or is that no, not in the standings? Okay, I misread that. All right, next week, we'll do this. Let's have you back and let's get picks on a regular basis, yes?
Sounds good.
Okay, we'll do it. Danielle Alvari, everybody. At Danielle Alvari, A-L-V-A-R-I. On Twitter. Always great seeing Danielle. Nice of her to get up. You know who else got up for us? Josh Towers on Baseball in Studio next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. And if you're planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. A couple notes before we get to Josh Towers from our WNBA segment with Danielle Alvari, who was kind enough to join us. The WNBA season is now 40 games. 40 games. Used to be 36. So roughly half of the NBA season now. They play 40 games. Season win totals available over at the Westgate. They have them available, and the top two teams, as Danielle pointed out, the Aces and the Liberty, both lined at 29.5.
Okay.
So essentially, you know, lined at a 750 per win percentage kind of team, more or less.
That Aces roster is stacked. Like, that is...
Candace Parker playing for them now.
Yeah.
Candace Parker seems kind of mercenary now. She's going from team to team trying to win championships, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to mess around with long shot WNBA plays like I did last year. I really think it is one of those. I think it's one of those two teams.
What did you and Matt do?
Atlanta Dream.
That's right.
And then they almost made the playoffs as like it was the same thing as like the NBA where they're a sub 500 team and we're rooting for them to make the playoffs just to have a chance.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's a man who likes to bet the WNBA from time to time. It's VSiN's own Josh Towers. How you doing, Josh? Former major league ball player.
I know you know how to respond to what he just said. What do you stay up late at night, bored man? And you're just thumbing through WNBA games and trying to figure out where your long shot is.
Josh, if you only knew the dumbest bets I've made in my life. Oh boy.
How you doing, man? Good.
I'm good, buddy. How are you? I miss you.
I miss you too. Where you been? Right
just
out here,
the corner.
Right over here.
Yeah,
right over there.
Stomping grounds to my right.
Josh Towers played for four Major League Baseball. Three Major League Baseball teams. Toronto, three. Baltimore,
yeah.
Yankees.
Yeah, three.
And famously, you know where I'm going, gave up Barry Bonds' 747th ding-dong, which is a big moment in Josh's life. First pitcher in Blue Jays history to have a single-digit uniform number as well.
That's my favorite.
Make a little history. We had you come up. Your name came up this week on the show. Jason Weingarten. He's gambling porn. We were talking about the St. Louis Cardinals. St. Louis Cardinals, who have had the worst record in the National League, and of course, what an organization from year to year. You don't expect to see that from them, and you know, okay, Jordan Walker had the hitting streak to begin the year, then he slumped, and so they you know sent him down, which is fine. But the thing we brought up was Wilson Contreras. Their big free agent signing in the offseason to be the next guy after Yadier Molina was Wilson Contreras. It was 5 years. It was $87 million. So he's got half of an offseason, like part of spring training, and then like a minute into the baseball season, right? We're still in early May. They're like, yeah, we don't want you catching for us anymore. So Jason's like, we got to ask Josh about this.
Yeah.
When you see something like that or witness something like that, what is your impression of that? And Jason's specific question was, his speculation is, and you would have a better sense of this than anybody is, doesn't that have to be the pitchers saying to managers or coaches, we got to get rid of this?
That's a good question. No.
No.
No. Yeah, it would, I can only imagine how bad it would have to be.
I love how you're like, it's a good question. No.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking legit, like I walk in to my manager's office and I'm like, yo, Gil's just not getting it done. Yeah. Like this can't happen. Like, I mean, now I'm turning my back on my teammates who I'm closest with than anybody. It would have to be so bad for us as players to do that. Now we might recognize stuff for sure. Hmm. But I'm going to work with you as closely as possible about what I like, what I see, how I want you to set up, how my brain works. Like you and I are going to work one-on-one so I can get the best version out of you. But no, players wouldn't. I could never see that. Now, it just shows you your homework, right? So what do we do in this whole world, right? What are we doing behind us, right? We're basing a lot of our bets, our thoughts, our everything we do on social media, everything we – it's all based on offense. I think it really is just based on offense. And I've been saying this my whole life, haven't done it. I don't care if a catcher hits 100. I don't care. As long as he can catch us, we love throwing to him, and his ERA with us is low. I don't care if he ever gets a hit. It does not matter to us.
That's how it used to be, right?
Right. And so We I think we've transformed this era of offense, and he can hit. Ain't no question, he can hit. He was batting three hole in Chicago, I think, and leading off sometimes. That's great, but you very rarely see catchers that can hit and catch. Look at Yadier Molina's stats, like, for his career, right? I mean, the career was forever. He's going into the Hall of Fame. Unless he better be walked into the Hall of Fame. Buster Posey, pretty good hitter in his own right, but look at the Giants as soon as Buster left. Like, it changes everything about the dynamics, and you don't have Yadier Molina, who is not only somebody I trust behind the plate, but the captain of the team, somebody I respect, somebody I look up to, somebody when he says something, I do it. They don't have that anymore. So Contreras is an offensive guy who obviously can't catch very well or doesn't know how to call a game, and that has to change. That's what, if you have pitching, you need a catcher.
So for those who would have the instinct, well, I mean, it's the Cardinals. They're still, you know, the second short shot. The Brewers are the favorite to win the National League Central. But the Cardinals, despite having the worst record not only in division but in the entire National League, they're second in terms of the betting numbers at DraftKings and everywhere else to win the National League Central. They're plus 380. The instinct for people to say, oh, well, the Cardinals always figure it out, I'm betting the plus 380. What I'm getting is you would be like, slow down on that, because Molina might have been the biggest cog in that wheel.
What did the Giants do the first year Buster didn't play?
The first year he didn't play? That was the year after the 107.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's this rebuilding phase, right? And so I haven't, like, the Cardinals pitching is the other problem, right? They're very inconsistent. There's a lot of injuries there.
81 and 81 would be your answer, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, well, we never really expected 100-plus wins either, right? So yeah, it's kind of tough, but that's more realistic. The Cardinals pitching is not as consistent, and I think that's more of the issue they need to address. I remember people would say, I probably shouldn't say this on air, I don't know if this is bad, people would always tell me, like, how do you get Greg Zahn to catch you so well? Like, why is Zahnie lock in for me? Why does he lock in for you? And I was, because I stroke his ego, and because we're friends, right? So, like, we're friends, but I tell him how great he is and how beautiful he looks, and he loves it. That's some of the stuff that we have to do as well, like, for each individual guy. And so they have to learn that internal, you know, relationship that they have with those guys. It's tough. But offense isn't going to win. I don't care. Offense alone will not win in our game. I think we've proven that.
Have the rule, has the pitch clock and all the rule changes or going back to old rules appeal to you? What is your stance on the shift going, being banned?
Yeah, I think it's funny when we move the outfielders, right? I mean, like I always say, that you can, Major League Baseball implements rules, and then we are one step ahead of them always with how we break them. I like not having the shift. When I'm throwing my sinker away, it teaches us to pitch to both sides of the plate again. When I'm throwing my sinker away to a lefty, I expect my shortstop to be there to catch that ground ball, right? And it's hard when they're not. So I'm good with that. The pitch clock for me is, it's how we worked anyways. It's how we were always taught. I know a lot of guys don't, but people who struggle taking too many time in between pitches, they're going to pick that up again. And I think the other thing it'll do, hopefully long-term, was what I'm hoping, so that our game gets improved, is it causes pitchers to think a little bit more instead of just reactionary throw their 98-mile-an-hour fastball and hope that it does well.
What is your reaction as a former pitcher to the new electronic method of a pitcher calling his own game? What were your thoughts on that?
So I know Maddox talked about it. I did it a lot, but how I did it would be like I'd throw a pitch and I'd kind of walk up and grab the pitch. And as soon as I saw the hitter look down or do whatever, he turned his back, I would be like fastball away, or I'd give my catcher, like, I'd just kind of do it. Like, you'd see it on TV, but the hitter wouldn't necessarily see it because we called our own game quite often. So on one hand, if the electronic thing is in the right area where it doesn't distract my rhythm and timing, I'm fine. But when I have to go to my glove and start typing it in, I want no part of it, right? And I don't like watching my catcher. So I want old school signs. But if it is to where I can real quick just hit a button because I have a specific pitch in mind and I don't want to mess around and shake too, then I kind of like it.
Here's what I really want to know in our final minute.
Let's go.
As bettors, what is the one thing that you and your experience here at VSiN, just listening to baseball experts, baseball pundits, whatever you want to call them, but those who bet the sport, what's the one thing that you think they get wrong the most consistently?
They don't look at streaks as far as individual players. Like, a pitcher can dominate a game. Look at Justin Steele. Look at these guys. Look at Ryan for the Twins. Look at some of these guys that are just very good baseball players. We're going to have a bad game every now and again, but when we get in a rhythm, we go. Look at Zach Gallen. Like, we don't think much about the Diamondbacks, but this guy's one of the best in the game. Like, when we get into rhythm, I'm going to have 3-4 games in a row where I'm very, very good. Same thing, when I start to struggle, I'm going to have like 2 or 3 in a row where I start to struggle, and I think that we have to look into consistency of the starting pitcher more than just deep dive into they're 7-2 on Tuesdays. It doesn't mean as much.
Well, yeah, that I think we do, but yeah. Streaks are a thing is what you're
for sure.
Saying.
Yeah, we're so robotic in how we perform, and so our brain just kind of shuts down or it gets overly thought processed, which we don't want.
Josh, we got to go, but I appreciate it. Come more often.
I'm down the street. You know where I live.
Throws it back. Josh Towers, everybody, right here on a Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We've done all we can do. Lombardi Line is next. Good luck with all your bets this weekend.